everyone, and welcome to Unlocking Wellbeing. This is a podcast brought to you by SolarVive. Unlocking Wellbeing is here to help you discover the keys to your own holistic health and help you improve your well-being. My name is Lance, and today Swathi and I will unpack what a sense of belonging is.
And with the help of our guests, we'll discover together how we can move closer to a feeling of sense of belonging in our communities, workplace, and life. Our two guests offer two unique perspectives on belonging, one from a spiritual point of view and another from a personal point of view. But before we move on, could you tell me, Lance, how can we define what sense of belonging is for our listeners, and while we also consider all the other complexities that comes with sense of belonging?
Well, Swathi, I think for most of our listeners, we've all experienced something over the last year to year and a half that has really been unprecedented for all of us. And being in a pandemic together as a global community has been an amazing insight into how we feel connected to each other. And when that connectedness was, you know, in some ways interrupted, we had to find new ways to connect with each other. We are innately social beings. That is, we crave to belong to each other. You know, Maslow, in his hierarchy of needs, he placed belonging at the center of the pyramid. We have this drive, this motivation to be connected with each other because it benefits our life and our health.
I think that makes so much sense. I mean, other than the past year or two that we've been in the pandemic, growing up as well, most of us have had situations where we felt like we didn't fit in or we felt different from other people around us. And throughout our life, we would be wondering if we ever will find people to whom we belong or we be at home at peace with. And this topic, like the moment we decided on it, I remember telling how great of a topic it is, and it's something that most of the people listening to this podcast will be able to relate with.
Yes, and this all starts in our early development. And I can remember back when I was in grade school, I played Little League Baseball in the United States. I spent hours playing this game that we all loved together and with kids my age. And it didn't matter whether we won or lost the game, because what I remember is after the game, a parent would bring a cooler full of like Orange Crush or some sort of soda, and we would just sit together and just share that time together. And I really felt that that was an earliest memory of kind of feeling like I belonged in a group, in a community. And it wasn't about winning a game. It was about this sharing this moment together. And for many of us, as we're growing up and we develop, we connect and we relate to people who are like us, that have similar interests. And it's really these relationships that give us what many researchers call a sense of security and support. And that sense of acceptance, that inclusion in a group, is how we identify with others. And then it's really the basic fundamental drive to forming lasting, positive and significant relationships with others.
I come from India, which is like a huge country with different cultures and different traditions, and being able to live in a state that I am not from and then adapting to the cultures and traditions and feeling like I'm a part of a big family and having that warmth of different traditions, like adapting to different traditions, has kind of given me, like throughout my life, it's been such a tricky place to be at. I don't know if I belong here, but people are so warm and welcoming. So it's such a broad topic, like, and I certainly have a lot to say about it, but I think it is also important for our listeners to think about what happens when we don't belong at a certain place or in a certain situation and how this affects us.
Yes, Swathi, I couldn't agree more. In many ways, this low sense of belonging has a lot of detrimental effects on our health. And I know much of the research has pointed, you know, Lauren Fisher is and her team at Mass General and Harvard Med, they've connected this low sense of belonging as it provides an important target for assessing an intervention in the treatment of things like depression. And we know that moderate to extreme loss of belonging can lead to things like eating disorders as well as suicidal ideation. These are real needs in our global community. And as a preventative health platform, we want to find ways that we can bridge the gap. And these long periods of isolation and loneliness has really been an epidemic. And the pandemic has only magnified this over the last couple of years. So I'm hoping that today that we can start to understand these anxieties and these stresses, this sense of hopelessness that can occur when someone has lost this sense of belonging. And in doing so, we can not only understand it more, but then find ways that we can overcome it.
But before we move on, let's take a quick break. Now we're going to talk about something called thwarted belongingness. Researchers have described it as a psychologically painful mental state that results when the fundamental need for connectedness or the need to belong with something or someone is not met.
Yes, Swati, if you think of like any time that we have a negative emotion, it's the result of a need that's not being met. And this psychologically painful mental state that you're describing is really our need to connect with other people. That social connectedness goes back centuries into our evolution. The truth is that we feel that we must belong to a larger group, and that contributes to our health. And if we have this challenge of loneliness and isolation, then there are detrimental impacts on our health.
The absence of care within relationships is such a detrimental thing, especially in today's world, because we live in the midst of a pandemic and it's so difficult to have physical contact with anyone, not being able to meet even your parents or your significant other or even your siblings for that matter or friends. It's such a tough place to be in where you are not able to be around the people that you felt like you belonged.
Let's take a few minutes just to break it down now. The idea of thwarted belongingness is really two facets. It encompasses loneliness as well as the absence of what researchers call a reciprocal caring relationship. That is, those caring relationships that come back time and time again, those people that we can lean on, that we can trust. And those cues exist within our social framework, and we create and connect based on the emotions and the feelings that we possess in those relationships. Now, when this is combined with the absence of any reliable relationships, that is, if we feel lonely and then those relationships are not there, then our sense of overall belonging diminishes. And what we found out from Jennifer Ma's research, which is some wonderful work in Australian National University, it points to this need for vulnerability. I'm really curious to find out this connection and these relationships that we can have where we can dare to be vulnerable. And in doing so, we can build those connections in a significant way.
Absolutely. There are a lot of positive outcomes that come from belonging. For example, did you know that having a sense of belonging puts you in a better mood? You know, that's something that no one really like thinks about, right? But research tells us that experience of belonging through inclusion, rather being excluded from something, results in decreased negative mood, ultimately improving the emotional well-being of a person.
Yeah, I see this often in my work. I know that this idea of how someone can ostracize themselves from a group when they don't feel like they belong. And in doing so, it contributes to their overall mood, their overall demeanor in terms of how they're going about life. But as soon as we can make connections to that social group, finding ways to reconnect, then mood increases and therefore our sense of well-being.
Absolutely. So I feel like the experience of belonging and being included in your workplace or at home can do so many changes to your mindset and decrease the negative mood and in turn increasing the positive outlook and outcomes in your mind itself.
A lot of the research that goes back to belongingness actually dates back to the mid-90s. Roy Baumeister and Mark Leary they were all about this idea of fighting isolation. And that is the effects of isolation on not only our mood, but our mental health. And they saw connectedness, this sense of belonging, as being a key factor in being able to predict how someone can move to a better place. And also, if that's not happening, they could actually predict other health factors. And when it comes to prevention, we want to be well aware of how these things work.
Research tells us that belonging is associated with a better ability to cope with stress and handle hardships that come our way. And people who feel that they belong also tend to have a better support system and social connectedness and tend to be valued and respected by their peers.
I found this in many, many people that I know, that there's a sense of confidence that comes from being connected. And as we feel more connected, that confidence then grows to even more psychological well-being in terms of motivation, as well as the goals that we achieve.
And also, last but not the least, having a sense of belonging can also improve your self-esteem. And research tells us that social self-esteem enables people to interpret cases of inclusion as well as cases of exclusion through a positive, realistic sense of self, and this enables the individual to learn from their experience. And this prevents a plunge towards a negative mood and a pessimistic outlook for relationships.
I think it's been really important for us, before we go into our real talk, we wanted to give you an opportunity to see just how important belongingness is in terms of the research. But now we're going to have an opportunity to dive a little bit deeper into a real life experience, and I'm excited for that.
Before that, let's take a quick break.
Welcome back, everyone, to our next segment of Unlocking Wellbeing. I'm Lance, and Swathi and I are really looking forward to our first Real Talk contribution. Today, you will get a chance to meet Sarah, and she's part of our human resource team at Solaviv.
Hi there, I'm Sarah, and I'm part of the HR team at Solaviv. I'd say my position is a hybrid of HR and legal, with the biggest fields being practitioner recruiting and compliance. But basically, I'm lucky in having a lot of interesting projects from both teams I can jump on and be part of. I finished my law degree in Germany and went into recruitment afterwards, wanting to combine both being a part of a multicultural company as what brought me to Solaviv. My theater group and my pets are great for being playful, a big part of not growing up too much. My books are great for staying imaginative, and traveling feeds my curiosity and sense of adventure. So, yeah, I guess that's me.
Hi, Sarah. It's great to have you with us on this podcast, and we're really excited for, you know, our real talk.
Awesome. I'm excited to be here, too. Thanks for having me.
Now, Sarah, I know you have a pretty interesting background, that you've been able to be introduced to different parts of the world and far away from your country of origin. We're wondering, in light of this experience, could you tell us a bit of how this experience has influenced your sense of belonging?
Well, I was born in Brazil, and I was adopted there as an infant. My parents came to live in Brazil because my father's job took them across the globe. They lived in different places. I was a little over 3 years old when we moved to Germany. And at about age 7, we moved to the U.S. and returned to Germany when I was about 10. And during that time, my parents really tried their best to keep me in touch with my Brazilian heritage. We practiced traditions, we spoke Portuguese, cooking the foods together, looking for Brazilian communities in Germany and the U.S. But at the same time, they wanted me to stay connected to the countries and places we were living, and they really did their best for that. So I'd say for me, it was always a little bit of a mixed experience to live somewhere. Looking back, I'd say I feel it was good growing up in different places, especially during an age where this took great influence on me. But it because it sort of made a lot of places special to me, and it made me able to feel homey in different surroundings quite fast. For example, like when I did work and travel after I graduated, I really fell in love with Scotland. This is because I was traveling through the UK. And there's this little rustic hostel in Edinburgh. It's actually in an old church. And every time I see pictures of it, or I walk past it, drive past it, whatever, and it makes me feel that I'm at home there as well. I think all of this adjusting and really making myself try to be comfortable everywhere that we are just helps me to feel at home a little more here and there.
Having grown up in so many cultures, do you ever feel a dichotomy between I'm not German enough, or I'm not Brazilian enough, or like, you know, do you have that questioning from inside, like all the time, every time you meet someone or you go through something?
Yeah, actually, I do. This would mainly concern Brazil and Germany, actually, this being the primary cultures that are within me or that I have a connection with. And I have this gap that I feel there quite a lot, especially, looking at my language skills, my Portuguese really could be better. And When I talk to friends, or especially my Brazilian friends, or if I travel to Brazil, I feel very self-conscious when speaking Portuguese, and it makes me feel a little embarrassed that I don't speak my language, because it sort of feels like it is my language, or it's one of my languages, and it makes me feel embarrassed that I'm not that good at it. And it also always gives me that little sting of feeling like I'm a little bit less of a Brazilian for not speaking my supposedly mother tongue that well. And living in Germany for such a long time, I feel pretty German because of that. And I love so many things about this country. But connecting with people here, I feel that a lot of them see a lot more of a Brazilian in me than a German. But after talking to me, then there's a lot of, I want to say, disappointment almost. It's like, she's not just gotten here. She's basically German, but not completely. So this experience always leaves me a little bit in the middle, and it gives me somewhat of a lonely feeling at times.
I can only imagine how difficult that would be feeling for you, and like the feeling of displacement. And have you ever felt like this split in culture ever contributed to feeling like you're not sure where you truly belong?
Definitely. I'd say it's somewhat of an anxious feeling. Maybe I can describe it as a bit of a fear of being exposed. Like sometimes I feel like I'm an imposter of some sort. And this goes in both ways. It goes if I'm proclaiming my Brazilian heritage or my German one. So sometimes I also must say that it makes me feel angry to some extent, because I don't want to have to justify my culture, my upbringing, the mixture I have experienced. I just want to be part of and just be accepted for the love and connection that I have to these individual countries. I mean, I live here, I live there, or at least I feel I live there. And I think that this sort of makes me feel that I come from both those countries and sometimes none of those countries. And it gives me a bit of a desperation to know where exactly I'm actually supposed to be or supposed to go. It's like, where is my spot?
Well, Sarah, I'd like to thank you first for being vulnerable and able to name those feelings of anxiety and anger. And these are true emotions. And, you know, I come from a school that really says that if we can name the emotions that we're going through, and even in the difficult circumstances in our lives, that we can manage them. And we know that it's human nature to modify our remarks and our gestures and actions to ensure our behavior is acceptable in the context and the community that we're in. And most of us strive to fit in and belong. And I'm curious, Sarah, you mentioned your desire to feel love and connection. And what have you noticed in regards to changes in behavior and the successful connections you've made, which have made the most difference and helped you feel more accepted or loved by a group?
For example, with our first move to Germany, I mean, I was really little, but still we used to speak Portuguese at home. I sort of blocked myself. I didn't want to speak any Portuguese in public because of the other kids on the street. I wanted to be like they are, and I was a super shy child. I didn't really like to approach other kids, and it made me feel very different if we weren't speaking the same language. So this is something I didn't want to do. I wasn't really comfortable with calling myself anything other than being a German. If asked, I always said, I'm German. I didn't want to say I'm Brazilian because I felt that it would make me different in a so to say, obvious sort of way. I'm a very outgoing person now, being a very enthusiastic when greeting people. I mean, I still have a hard time approaching groups from just my character, but I tend to be a little loud or a little overly, let's say, friendly maybe. In Brazil, we just hug and kiss a lot when meeting new people, and this is something that I try not to do too much in Germany because I have noticed that once you get to know people, they're comfortable with it and they really appreciate it, this showing of affection, because it shows them that you care about them and they can show you that they care about you, which really makes a great connection with friends and especially of course family. But with strangers, not so much. So this is something I've had to change about myself, not doing that. Or even I have quite a frizzy head of curls and always used to tie my hair back or just comb it down a little because I didn't want it to be so obviously different from others. So I think it's a lot of those things that I have been doing, or even within speaking in groups, being a little more on the silent side, second row kind of way, because I don't want to cater to any cliches of being a loud Latina, so to say. And those are things that I felt that did make a difference for me, and changing them gave me a feeling of having an easier time of approaching groups, of finding my spot within a group. And if we evolve in that whole dynamic we are in, if we're starting to feel more comfortable, I, depending on the surroundings, I can be more myself, and then it wouldn't feel as if I'm showing anything that is negative. But in that first approach, I just think I do still have to take myself back a little more for a group to really be able to open up and let me join.
That's a real great insight. Every time I have traveled, or I lived in UK for my master's for 2 years, and I remember, like, because I'm Indian, everyone would just assume that I like spicy food. So, like, that's such a stereotype that, you know, I had to fight off, and I'd be like, oh no, I can't actually eat spicy food. I don't like eating spicy food. And everyone would be so shocked just to, like, hear that. And I felt like I was not Indian enough in their eyes. And I was like, okay, that's kind of weird. I'm pretty sure all of us have felt that they don't belong at a certain point in their life. But I want to know what you think, like, sense of belonging, like, how it differs for you from your friends who were born in Germany. Like, how is it different for you and them?
I think especially for friends of mine who were born in Germany and who have their roots in Germany, their families rooted in Germany, they never questioned their home, their belonging. I think that they don't even feel that this would be something that could even be questioned. It's sort of a birthright. It's just there. But of course, I also have a lot of friends who are born in Germany, but they have roots or family in other countries. And for them, I would say that they do have a sort of conflict in them as well. And something that helps them a lot would be that they have communities here that help them stay connected to their cultures, their other home countries. And this is something that I sort of lack. I mean, there aren't that many Brazilian communities which I could approach, and part of it is my fault for self-doubting me so much that I don't really have the confidence to get into touch more. But I feel for them who have that, who are strong and have this source that they can draw from. I think that for them it's sort of a different layer of belonging. I just feel that we sort of all have our sense of belonging, but it just comes from different directions. One being really confident. There's no question about that. This is me. This is where I belong. Others who are able to just tie it together, have both, and feel happy with it. And for me, maybe a little bit more of a struggle.
Yeah, you mentioned that source of belonging. I really like that metaphor. It's almost like going to the well to get the water, a source that I can go to on a regular basis. We mentioned in the research before that reciprocal relationship, those people that we can lean on, obviously is something that we take for granted. And when we are growing up in a country and perhaps not experiencing anything else, but as soon as that's taken away, then as you said before, you have these vulnerable times where there can be, you know, you can feel like an imposter, or you can feel disconnected in some way. Hearing your story, I think it really points to what many of us feel when we would like to define where home is. You mentioned that rustic hostel in Scotland, and I can picture it as something that you experienced along the way and then were able to go back to and say, you know, I feel at home here. So Sarah, I'm curious, what do you feel has been the most useful to you to help you manage this sense of belonging, to change and to evolve with this sense of belonging throughout your life?
I think for me, a lot would be a journey of gaining self-confidence. I have a theater group, which I join, which I do as one of my greatest hobbies. And I must say that this group, this having to go on stage, having to perform, is something that really helped me with my self-confidence. That as a first step was really important for me to be able to start owning who I am. I'm definitely proud to be Brazilian. I love that I was born there. I love everything that this culture and my roots can give me from that. But at the same time, of course, I'm also proud to be German in my very own way, in my unique way. And I think that I'll probably always feel a little bit lost. But having started this journey of really more self-acceptance also is a thing that I think gave me the opportunity to shift my expectations and maybe even manage my expectations, that I don't have to try to gain that same sense of belonging as people in my surroundings have, as my friends have, no matter what their background might be, but just to look for my own spot in between, something where I feel comfortable. So I think my journey's far from over. I still want to evolve, and this is something that I try to take as my starting point and to keep in mind, because I want to make sense of where I belong, what my place is, looking for that place, and sort of finding my own way of where I feel I have the right to be. So not really looking for where does it make sense for me to belong, or is this a place where I belong, but maybe also a state of mind that I want to reach. So more or less my sense of belonging really shifted from not rooting just in one country, but maybe accepting that I feel at home or feel connected to more than one country, and this not only being Brazil or Germany, but also for a big part of my life, even the U.S. or Scotland. Those are just things that maybe I try to tie together and just take what they can give me and to focus more on it being a place and state of mind to focus my sense of belonging.
We know from the numerous amount of research papers that what contributes to a sense of belonging in the lives of immigrants is the feeling of belonging among other immigrants, and that becoming relatively stronger the longer they stay in their new home. Can you relate to this? Can you speak to this?
I think I would agree with this. I mean, being in one place, living there, learning like customs and habits and whatever else there is to learn, we sort of slowly internalize these. We adapt. We may even shape them to our own liking, or that they fit more of the person that we ourselves are. But I think a big part of it is growing comfortable with them. And that social interaction is, I think, the most crucial point of it. If we wouldn't be interacting with one another, what we would do is just living on next to each other, and we wouldn't even be able to bridge any gaps and differences we might feel we have. And to be able to get closer, to communicate and to learn from one another, that's, I think, the vital point that we're sometimes, or a lot of times, still very much lacking. So I guess if we understood each other more, if we would communicate, we would work against all of those biases, those insecurities that sort of put up the wall that is so hard to break down when trying to find your place of belonging, your sense of belonging, to feeling comfortable with it. So arriving in a new home, for me, for my experience, I think a lot of it would have been much easier, and I would have felt the door is open and I can just walk through and find my spot within wherever I am. So not only the place you are, but also your mindset. I think this would help a lot for really reaching that belonging.
I think there's a lot that we can learn from this mindset, this idea that social integration and I truly think from your story today that we've learned just how that can work for somebody. I feel we've learned so much about this crucial topic of belonging today through your story, Sarah. I would like to really thank you for sharing with us on Unlocking Wellbeing today and wish you the best of luck. I feel like the choices and the things that you described today will really contribute to a bright future as you continue to live in Germany.
Thank you so much for that. And it was awesome being here. Thanks for inviting me. I love that you gave me the chance to participate here and share. Was an amazing experience. Thanks for you both.
Thank you, Sarah. Take care.
Thanks, Sarah.
Well, everyone, I was really glad that we were able to speak with Sarah today, but don't go away just yet. Our next segment is called Ask the Expert, and we will speak with a wonderful spiritual resource from the Solovie community. Her name is Yolanda Steenkamp, and she will help us unlock further insights in how we can work together to prevent the negative effects of loneliness and isolation.
And without further ado, let's spend some time with our expert, Yolanda. I'm so excited to introduce our next guest for our Ask the Expert segment. Her name is Yolanda Steenkamp, a certified and experienced spiritual health practitioner with an extensive academic background in theology. She believes in the importance of searching for the meaning and purpose in life. Welcome to the podcast, Yolanda.
Thank you so much, Swati. It's a real privilege to be with you.
Lance and I, we've been talking about the topic sense of belonging, and I wanted to know, have you ever encountered what a sense of belonging is in your profession?
Yeah, so I think my first formal engagement with it was years ago when I was studying and learning how to interpret ancient spiritual texts that were written for a context that was entirely different to my own. So I had been raised in quite an individualistic culture, which I think is the case for most people in the Western world. And many of, if not most, of the ancient spiritual texts of the world were written for an audience that's very much collectivistic. meaning that the meaning of the individual is connected to the group they form part of. So it's really important when interpreting these ancient texts to keep such differences in mind. Otherwise, you'll read into the text, you know, an entirely different meaning not intended by the original authors. So my very first thoughts about belonging were very much impacted by this question of how to interpret ancient collectivistic texts for a contemporary individualistic culture without doing any violence to, you know, the meaning of the text. So perhaps just a moment to distinguish between collectivistic and individualistic cultures. These rather big words. So essentially this comes down to the question of the one, or let's say me or you, Swathi, or you, Lance, how the one relates to the many. So the communities that we belong to, it can be the local community or let's say a culture or a country. So I can explain it maybe just briefly as follows. Imagine that you're holding a string in your hands with the one end in your right hand representing the individual. You can think of yourself. The one, and the end in your left hand representing the social group, the many. And we're going to use this to understand the difference between individualism and collectivism. The idea of one individual and a social group exists in biological tension. This is just a smart way of saying that you can't think of one without thinking of the other. They logically imply one another. So the way you think about one is also sure to have an impact on the way you think about the other. So the way you think about your right hand is going to have an impact on how you think about your left hand in this specific case. They are inseparable. So generally speaking, different cultural groups have tended to let the emphasis fall on either one of the extreme ends, often at the cost of the other. So either they will lean over all the way to the right side and emphasize the individual, that's the individualism of the modern Western world, or they find themselves way over and emphasize the social group, which is the collectivism of many of the older cultures of the world, such as Asian cultures, African cultures, and then if you think of like the ancient world of our spiritual texts, that would include most of them. So the interesting thing is that because of the individual and the social group standing in dialogical tension, it's quite impossible to ever get rid of either one, even though you may try. So in extreme forms of individualism, remember that's your right-hand side, people may completely deny the influence of the social group and pretend that there really isn't such a thing. A group is just a collection of a bunch of individuals. And similarly, in extreme forms of collectivism, the role of the individual may be entirely denied, and the individual becomes a means only to a greater collective end. So for the sake of your community and the collective is more important than the individual. Now, if we speak of belonging, we'll find ourselves moving along different tension points on this continuum. Imagine that you are holding this cord. And we need to pay attention to what feels healthier as we shift. And in different situations, we'll also shift. It's not about being static at all. It is about becoming more aware, developing a growing awareness of where we are on this continuum. So we'll get into all of that today, but let me just say for now that the desire to belong will often confront us with questions of choices of where on this continuum. Usually, people either fall way over to the right, where it's all about the individual, or they lean way over to the left, where the individual seems to disappear. It's all about the group. And both these extreme tendencies seem to be really bad for creating a sense of belonging, interestingly enough, so that people end up feeling quite lonely at either ends of these extremes. So to get back to your question, Swathi, this is how the issue of belonging first came on my radar in my professional work. As I was involved in counseling and general spiritual work later on, I came to see that so many problems that caused people quite an amount of agony had to do with questions of belonging. Also in my own life, of course, experienced the impact of this. And over the years, I've reflected often on the meaning of belonging and whether to think of ourselves primarily individuals or primarily in terms of the groups that we belong to.
Interesting that you should say that, Yolanda, since the research tells us that a sense of belonging is not only the precursor to social connectedness, but also a buffer against loneliness. So do you think belonging could be a buffer against loneliness? Do you believe in that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We don't have to be overly theoretical about it either. I'm sure our listeners have experienced this in their own lives. A lack of connection breeds loneliness. But it is not just about existing within a group either. You'll definitely remember that saying that there's a difference between being alone and being lonely. It's entirely possible to find yourself among friends, yet at the same time being overwhelmed by feelings of loneliness. You know, that sense that no one gets me, no one understands me, I can't say how I really feel, that kind of thing. Or being by yourself and yet feeling very connected. That's also very possible. These may seem to point out a paradox, but it really has to do with resolving this tension on this continuing between the individual and the collective that we spoke to above. And I'm sure that we'll return to this.
I think we experienced that tension pretty profoundly in this past, 18 months of a global pandemic. And I recall going back to the early stages of really a year ago, a year ago from now in summertime, where we were really reeling from first lockdowns and this idea of what COVID-19 was all about and the spread and the threats around the globe. And I do recall this beautiful story coming out of Denmark by September, where the community rallied around a word, a Danish word called samfund, community spirit. And it was this beautiful illustration of how what you are describing in terms of these collective choices, but also being mirrored with this individualistic Western thought, in that every individual choice is tied and in many ways in tension with that need for the community, almost in an integral balance. So many of the decisions that were coming out of Denmark were reflected in this like community spirit, that is, we're in this together. Mm. And many of the things that you are describing reminded me of that. And also thinking about prehistoric times, and that, our ancestors were hunter-gatherers. It was really based on cooperation within a group and was necessary for our survival. And at the same time, we are born attached and a bit dependent on our caregivers. And you mentioned earlier how from our early development, this sense of belonging becomes a part of who we are. And we've been really curious today in our conversation with Sarah, just how this innate longing to belong manifests inside of us. And I'm curious, based on your practice and interactions, what have you noticed that brings a healthy balance for people who have that longing to belong while still striving to live an independent and healthy life?
I love that you made that point, Lance. It's so important. And if I can speak to the first part of your comment first regarding the prehistoric times and sort of use that to get to the second. I think it is so important to be very connected to our physical existence. And this is something that in spiritual traditions, it's very easy to disregard the importance of the fact that we live physically. And our human genome has encoded generations and generations of adaptations that optimize our survival. And this is really interesting how it has encoded us, really primed us to live a social life. We're literally wired for group existence. Since in prehistoric times, this increases our odds for survival. And practically, this means that our genetic heritage sets us up for group dependence and enables us to quote-unquote read our group members. Just think, for example, how survival depends on the ability to distinguish between living and inanimate objects. We don't often question this, but it's significant that we are born with complex neurological mechanisms that enable us to detect and recognize faces. Have you thought about the way that babies just seem to know that they should look at someone's face? This is something that's been encoded for us. We receive it. But that's not enough. We also have to be able to interpret facial expressions. So a large part of our social existence depends on the ability to intuit the response of others to my actions, so that I can see, you know, is the group approving of what I'm currently doing? I have to read that on their faces. And if you think of something that happens, you know, very naturally, like blushing, it's really interesting that we only blush on the part of our body that's visible to other people. You don't blush on your feet where you wear shoes. It serves a social function to blush, to show to the group that you are aware and value their response. It's a very subtle message. And, you know, we just receive all of these functions of our body that enable us to live in community. And these processes involve our nervous system. Many of you will have heard of mirror neurons. I'm not going to go into that. Or our hormones. Many of you may have heard of oxytocin, etc. And our tendency for social learning, to name just a few. So the interesting thing now is that there seems to be a dependence in our relationships on recognition from others in order to form a sense of self. This happens very, very early. It starts when we're babies. And in the way that a mother looks at the face of her infant and responds to the emotions she recognizes in the face of her child and mirrors that back to the child. Hello, beautiful boy. Hello, beautiful girl, she says, smiling. And the baby looks at his or her existence being affirmed by a significant other, the most significant other, in this case, the primary caretaker. So as we grow up, our caretakers respond to us, and it seems that over time, this kind of consistent response where our existence is acknowledged by an outside caretaker, it contributes to us constructing this idea that there is an I present in the room. And one could say that the consistent response of our significant others call us into being. We start to develop a sense of self, and it's really no exaggeration. Most of this takes place, of course, unconsciously and pre-verbally. So it's not like we have any conscious access to it now when we are having this discussion and wondering about how this works. But that doesn't mean that it's not there and that it doesn't impact us to a huge, huge extent. And so we develop this idea that we exist based on that external response of our communities to us. They bring us into existence.
You see this when a baby takes their first steps. The parent that the child is walking toward, they both have the same expression of joy on their face. It's absolutely beautiful. It's almost like a mirror image of the same expression of joy. And this awareness within the child that I have done this and my parent is so pleased.
Yes, absolutely. I love that you gave the example as well. Thanks, Lance, because it can easily get very theoretical, but that's exactly the point. And so that's the one side of the coin. There's also another side of the coin. So we don't merely receive our sense of self from others. There's a two-way communication going on. We participate very actively. I have to interpret what happens to me. I interpret the impressions I receive from others as I grow up. And so the idea that the self begins to form in the interplay, you know, this is this very often a playful interaction between the feedback I receive from others and the active role of interpretation and storytelling that I play. So I'm going to refrain from going into too much detail, but I want to point out that on a neurological level, on a social level, on a psychological level, our existence and our sense of self is intimately tied up with the acknowledgments we receive from the communities that we belong to. And we can even see this in how important this idea of living, existing in and through community is. We can see that reflected in our spiritual traditions. This is interesting because our ideas of gods and goddesses, they often reflect like a window. They're a window on what it means to be human. And in most religious traditions, these deities have been portrayed as themselves living in relationship. So whether you think of the ancient Greek pantheon of deities and they all live in these family relations, to the idea of the Trinity in Christianity, you know, God's self being in relationship within the God being, to the other Abrahamic religions where God is the central figure who is always in relationship to creation and to humanity. So, of course, is Islam and Judaism. We find expressions of this literally everywhere. And the takeaway message for us is that relationship is part of what makes us human. We cannot imagine being human without existing in relationship.
This has been, like, so eye-opening for me. This conversation, like, it's triggering a thought about, like, you know, how painful it is to be excluded or rejected from the group. And I'm pretty sure all of us would have at some point in our life felt that. And how do you think that the feelings of rejection or exclusion affects us?
Yes. Really intensely. So the studies have found that social exclusion causes real trauma. So if you remember, the definition of trauma is the perception by someone that their very life or their way of life. In fact, studies have found that the same brain regions are stimulated to social rejection as to, let's say, you were someone was chasing you with a knife, or you, if something happens and you perceive your actual life to be in danger, the same areas of the brain light up. And this is because, of course, in historic times when our genome evolved, being excluded from your group almost certainly resulted in death from hunger or predators. So the group was highly dependent on each other. And I think there's a lot of room for compassion here. Next time you experience your peers gossiping about you or judging you, and you notice your heart racing or your breath rushing and your palms becoming sweaty, have compassion that at least as far as your body is concerned, you perceive this as a real physical threat to your survival.
I'm curious, based on your work, what do you feel is most useful for people who have developed these feelings, where they can change this mindset from I'll never belong to more of I'm worthy of belonging?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think it's great if as we continue through life, we can learn to be more and more flexible and not too statically stuck in our beliefs that we help, and to apply that maybe also to what we said earlier in terms of the continuum in terms of belonging to yourself or belonging to community. It's not about finding a new point where you have a new belief. Let's say you grew up in an individualistic belief system, and now you go all the way over to the other side and you just adopt a new belief system that won't necessarily stand you in great stead. It's about developing that agility to see that I am someone who can move, who can adapt my beliefs and my decisions based on what happens to me. Now, this aspect is what I like to refer to as our storytelling, and it's incredibly important. In fact, it can determine our whole life. We are meaning-making creatures, and whatever happens in life is immediately interpreted by us. If you have very, very solid and static belief systems, you will tend to tell and retell the same kind of stories. But if you are willing to move, if you are agile in response to what happens to you, then you can start to be playful an experiment regarding the stories that you tell, and this can really help you to live a healthier existence, because there's huge amount of choice available to us with the stories that we tell. And let me give you an example rather than be theoretical about it. let's say that I'm a high school student who finds my peers ostracizing me for coming from a different cultural background. We don't laugh at the same jokes. I act in a weird way, and so they have begun to withdraw from me. And this is a really painful experience that I, as a teenager, am called to deal with. The first part of it is that I have come to terms with the negative feedback I'm receiving from them. I have to come to terms with that. Essentially, they're trying to give me the message that I'm not okay. And this is what happens objectively outside of me, and I can't really do very much to change that. It's out of my control to a large extent. Not completely. We'll get to that later. The second part of the experience is my responsibility, though, namely to tell the story, to interpret what is happening, interpreting this objective event and creating meaning out of it. The choice I make here is really, really important because I am the powerful one here, and the choices I make will end up co-determining my sense of identity, so my sense of who I am. So let's say, two scenarios. Let's say I interpret this event, being ostracized at school because I come from a different cultural background. Let's say I interpret this event and tell a story something along the following lines. I will never make any friends, and I have a lot to feel ashamed of. Now, just use your imagination. Feel in your body the effect of such a story. Can you feel how your body responds where some tension begins to build? Now, can you imagine what my future relationships would look like if I were to tell this story to myself? I will never make any friends, and I have a lot to feel ashamed of. Right? Not the best outcome in terms of connection and belonging. On the other hand, imagine I told the following story in response to this rejection I experienced. Something like, some people have real trouble dealing with people who are different from them, and that keeps them from building relationships with some people. I can remember moments where this was not the case. For instance, last weekend at the community center, I remember everyone there being so fascinated by my different background, and they just wanted to know more and more. I think it would be better for me to spend more time with people who are able to deal with difference more than people who struggle to welcome people who are different than them. So this is an entirely different story. And again, if you use your imagination and you feel in your body, just feel the response of the body to this story. And can you see that based on this decision that I would make there as a teenager, it's literally possible that my life can unfold in two entirely different directions. So the power that we have with the stories that we tell and our ability to be flexible in our response and interpretation of what happens to us is incredible. It's like holding a magic wand in your hand and saying that I may not have control over how people responded to me just now, but I have full control over the impact that this event will have on my life, and I will interpret it in a way that affirms who I am and the relationships that I live in, rather than destroy them.
I mean, Yolanda, a teenager me would have loved to think about it and hear like these kinds of like understand that there can be two different kinds of story and feel more accepted into her school or her community, because I had always had issues with feeling like I belong to a community or that I have made friends who understand me, and this has absolutely opened my mind to so many different possibilities at this point. And I understand that interpersonal relationships are important in everyone's life. And how do you think how important are interpersonal relationships when you're trying to figure out and establish a sense of belonging in yourself?
Yes, so it's critical. It's so important, and no one can deny it. I don't know if I can state it more emphatically.
Yeah.
Remember the point about our whole nervous system being set up for social interaction? So to have a healthy sense of self, we need healthy interpersonal relationships. Now, immediately, this may cause many people to feel discouraged. I can just imagine it as they hear this, because perhaps this is something they struggle with in relationships. And they think that it means they will never be able to belong. But this is not so. It's really important to remember that love is a verb, and so is belonging. And here, I said that it's not entirely true that we have zero control about how the world responds to us. It is true to a large extent, but we have to remember that we do have agency, which means we can take actions that will impact and improve our lives. So I said that love is a verb, and belonging is also a verb. And very often we think of belonging as a state that we have to reach. I have reached the state where I belong. But this is not the case at all. Relationships, you know, that's something that we work on the whole time. It's very, very fluid and dynamic. And we should think of action when we think of belonging, and then ask yourself how you can take action in a relationship and create a sense of community for others. This is the quickest way of creating a sense of community for yourself as well. So to give a personal example, I remember just a few years ago, the last of my family emigrated to another country just a few days before my birthday. So you can imagine how lonely and deserted I felt the closer my birthday came. And it got worse the closer we got to the day. And to be honest, I felt quite sorry for myself. And the moment that I recognized that, I immediately took action and asked myself, I want to have a sense of community on my birthday. So what can I do to create that? And I started planning a birthday dinner, and I invited a bunch of people, and I cooked for them. And I decided to take action and create the community that I longed for, not only for myself, but for others. And this is how we create belonging. Give to others what you feel you need, and you'll find yourself very soon receiving it as well. It's just how life works. And this is really great news, because it's clear that the power of belonging lies with ourselves to a large extent. As I said before, remember, look in your hand. That's where you hold the magic wand. If you feel like you don't belong, ask yourself what you've done lately to create a sense of community for someone else. Take action. Take initiative.
To make this distinction, I think, is extremely important, especially in light of our real talk with Sarah today and how she made these changes going from different parts of the world, and how she came to this awareness that to truly belong was to really have a sense of who she was, instead of just trying to fit in. And this distinction, I think, is quite profound. And I'm curious, Yolanda, based on what you've been able to tell us today, what you think of this distinction, and is this something that we should emphasize in our work?
Yes, totally. I love the distinction. I think it's really important. I can't pretend to be someone I'm not, just to be accepted by a group. And I will know that this is not possible for me, that something is wrong with what I'm doing. There will be discomfort. My body will tell me, it will give me a clue that I'm being dishonest in some way. Either depression or anxiety or feelings of loneliness or as a pain in my chest. But there will be some signal that I'm not being my own self. And this means that I cannot be authentic in relationship either.
As we've established, fitting in and belonging are two different things. And it is important for our listeners to get a clear-cut view about how they can tell the difference of those two in their own lives.
I can think of a few examples from my own life, but I think, let me share one that is really challenging to me, because if I pretend that I have it all figured out, then I don't think it's of much value to anyone. So something you should know about me in order to understand this is that it's really generally hard for me to express anger. most of the time just feeling angry. It's really hard, let alone express it to someone else. If I do manage, and my husband teases me about it, if I do manage, it like comes out as a whisper, like, I feel really angry with you. So, I'm so uncomfortable with that emotion. And generally, I just pretend everything is fine so that everything can appear to be peaceful and there's no conflict. Because very early on in my life, speaking in terms of identity, that's the identity I took on. I am the peacemaker. And over the years, I've noticed that it was maybe a great strategy for whatever the reason was when I was a child. But now that I have to deal with real life, it's not a great strategy. And there's dishonesty inherently there about how I'm really feeling. And especially in intimate relationships, like those relationships that really matter to you, you run a huge risk if you allow any lack of authenticity or realness and dishonesty into those relationships. It creates a sense of isolation. You know, there's a deep-seated belief, I'm not allowed to feel a certain way in a given relationship. And then, soon enough, you'll find yourself withdrawing. At least that's what I do. I notice that I withdraw, and I just end up feeling lonely and often resentful towards the other person. And usually, the funny thing is, usually that person won't even know that any of this is going on, right? This is all internal.
Exactly, yeah.
And I'm not pretending that this has been easy at all and that I succeed all the time, but I've had to learn, and I'm still learning, to communicate in a responsible and very productive way when I am angry. I'm motivated to do this because I care about a given relationship. And I have been astounded to see how people respond positively when I communicate clearly and respectfully regarding how I truly, really feel. And especially because when it comes from that place, they can feel that I'm communicating because I care. Even if it's a really hard conversation to have, it comes from a place of caring for this relationship. And I've just been blown away that people actually respond positively to me feeling angry. Like, who can imagine?
Well, Yolanda, I'm afraid that that is the time that we have for today. And I'm just truly thankful for the time that you've spent with us to answer some of these really impactful questions on the sense of belonging. Just mm-hmm. hearing you speak, in many ways, I feel like I've gone to church. I say that with all respect to every religion, but you truly speak from your heart, and I get a sense that you practice what you preach. But also, I'm sure that the many people who come across your health practice benefit from your expertise, as well as helping them see what works for them and helping them feel more of a belonging in their community.
Thank you. And also to all our listeners, I hope that this helped you in some way. And blessings, blessings, blessings for your own personal journeys.
Thanks, Yolanda.
Thank you.
Well, everyone, this is a time that we introduce our practical exercise segment. And as you know, at the close of each of our podcasts, we'd like to leave you with a small piece of practicality to take with you, try out, and explore on your own and with those you love. It's because we really love you being with us in this whole experience. And this week, we would like to give you an option to simply take out a piece of paper. It doesn't matter what color it is or how many lines are on it. And what we'd like you to do is write down three places or groups that create a positive sense of belonging for you. I'll repeat, three places or groups that create a positive sense of belonging for you. Once you've written those three places or groups down, I'd like you to take a moment and reflect on why you feel a sense of belonging towards that place or group. and how you feel within this group or place or space? How do you know that this positive sense of belonging becomes alive in you when you think of these places or groups? This practical exercise is really a way for you to take some time and reflect, and also take account of those things that truly work for you when it comes to your own sense of belonging. And as we heard from our guests today, when you are able to recognize those things that work for you and notice them, then you can be reminded of them in the days to come, and hopefully be able to see them more often as they're happening for you. So thank you all very much for joining us for another episode of Unlocking Wellbeing. I'm Lance Fortner.
And I'm Swati Nair.
And we'll see you next time.